next item is Bay City Mobile Home Park Corrective Survey on Road 22.
Gentlemen, before you, you can see a set of rolled up plans. There's 5 pages for your review. If you can, don't mind sharing them, I'm going to pass down copies of them.
I guess that means you want us to unroll them.
Okay. Again. I'm going to pass down copies of the
report. Go that way with that one, and I'll go this way with that one. I want to send that down the line, you and I'll get this one.
Tried to prepare a written summary of my review of the revised survey of Bay City Mobile Home Park for discussion this afternoon during the special meeting. The agenda item is a report from staff on a comparison of a recent survey performed by Coast Survey Incorporated to original surveys prepared by Isaac Bennett and modified by Walter Todd, both being land surveyors. Mr. Bennett has passed away several years ago. Previously, the commission has been made aware of problems within the park. And for history, on March 6th of 2008, David Baker, County Administrator, wrote to Bay City Limited Partnership and advised that as of March 7th of 2008, the Sussex County Board of Assessment and the Planning and Zoning Commission Department would cease issuing building permits and placement permits on lots within Bay City unless proof could be provided that the issuance of a building permit or placement permit is necessary for public health or public safety benefit. This included placement of new manufactured homes or accessory structures such as sheds or gazebos, as well as improvements or additions to existing manufactured homes or mobile homes. The letter referenced that county records indicate that there are numerous violations in the park for violation of front, side, and rear setbacks, maximum lot coverage, in addition to numerous open building permits and placement permits that could not be checked because they are in violation of code, which requires that the developer provide the county with a survey by a licensed Delaware land surveyor showing corners of each site visibly marked and numbered by permanent markers. Without doing so, it is impossible for inspectors to determine where the property lines are located to allow inspectors to determine that a manufactured home or mobile home or other structure meets setback requirements. The letter also advised that if the partnership failed to take action to correct these violations, the county would be left with no alternative but to take whatever legal action available to alleviate the problem. In effect, a moratorium was placed on the issuance of permits in Bay City. On March 14th of 2008, Richard Burrell, Junior Assistant County Attorney, and myself met to discuss Bay City and the moratorium with Mr. and Mrs. Paul Olivier, the developers. Mrs. Susan Isaacs, Chief Zoning Inspector, was also in attendance. The purpose of this meeting was to discuss the moratorium. We reviewed the plots of the old and new sections of the park. The developers were advised by staff that we need accurate boundaries of lots in order to determine setbacks and lot coverage issues. In review of the plots, it appeared that the new section could possibly be released upon confirmation that individual lot surveys could be completed. In the older section, it appeared that at least 50% of the lots were in the position where lot surveys could be created, as they appeared to be lot corners or lot markers in many instances, as well as meets and bounds descriptions. It was also determined that the older section originally surveyed by Isaac Bennett and revised and amended by Walter Todd, that it must be surveyed to verify lot line locations or corrections and changes. The developer agreed to contact Coast Survey Incorporated to research the plots, the park, and prepare surveys. On a later date, Dean Pettijohn, zoning inspector, inspected the newer section and found some lot markers were actually plastic pipe, which was not acceptable for locating lot corners. Therefore, the developers were advised that we need surveys of all the lots within the park, both the old and new section. After several discussions on the phone and in the office counter with representatives of Coast Survey Incorporated, we finally received surveys depicting all the lots within the park. These surveys were originally scheduled to be reviewed by the commission on September 17th of 2008, but were removed from the agenda to allow more time for staff to review the details of the surveys. The surveys have been placed on today's agenda for your consideration of the staff review. The commission may accept the surveys as revised preliminary plans in concept, ask for additional information, reject the plots as submitted, or defer action for further consideration. The surveys contained, as you see, 5 sheets of lot layout. In reference to each of the sheets, I'll provide the following. On sheet number 1 of 5, which is a portion of the old section, and this is a breakdown of, I've got one here that's got red lines all over it, so you'll be able to see the difference of what I worked from comparing 2 plots together.
Okay.
Lot 1 through 4 depict changes in the width and depth of lots 1 and 3 and expanded width and square footage of lot 4. These lots were reviewed by the commission on April 19th of 2007 when the developer requested to enlarge the lots. Action was deferred. And then on October 17th of 2007, the commission denied the request due to the fact that inadequate information had been provided, that there were conflicts with existing plots, and since a wetland delineation has not been completed. For your information, the wetlands line is now depicted on the drawing. It will be at the top of sheet 1. It does show the location as it compares to wetlands. Some of the street layouts have changed based on the survey. The streets originally were laid out in straight lines. The survey depicts the streets with minor crooks and bends, and I use the example streets titled Sequoia, Mahogany, Fern, Juniper, Bamboo, Walnut, and South Canal Streets. Previously, I had received a survey from Walter Todd, and that was dated March 19th of 2008. That depicted all lot corners with markers and monuments with iron rebar for lots 234 through 247 on South Canal Street. That would be the area to the right as you're looking at sheet number 1. On this survey, there have been minor changes to corner dimensions and approximately 1 square foot in the lot calculation. That was Coast versus Todd. 1 square foot of difference on almost all those lots. Mr. Todd also referenced all the streets around lots 234 and 247 as South Canal Street. The Coast Survey depicts it as South Canal Street and North Canal Street. Continue on page 1, or sheet 1, lots 35 and 38 on Walnut Street have been enlarged and reconfigured, as have lots 50, 51, and 54 through 59 on Circle Drive. Lot 53 no longer exists. Lots 47 and 48 have been enlarged in depth along Circle Drive. Lot 124 has been enlarged at the corner of Circle Drive and First Street. Lots 112 through 120 have been revised along Mahogany and First Streets, mostly on lots 115 through 117 and lot 120, which are at intersections, so they acquired where there were large blocks cut out along the right of way of the intersection. Lot 104 has been enlarged along Circle Drive. Lots 82 through 97 have been altered at a minimum by width changes. Lots 89 has been enlarged on the corner of Circle Drive, Berry Street, and Sequoia. Lot 00 and 143F have been enlarged in depth and square footage. And several of these lots did not have dimensions or square footages referenced on the original Isaac Bennett survey. In summary, and in reference to sheets 2 of 5 being still in the old section, lots to the right or south of Main Street are basically the same except for alteration to lots 41 through 45B on Canal Street, lots 154 through 157A on South Cedar Street, which have dimensional changes and sideline realignments. Lot 162A on South Maple Street, lots 174 on Orange Street, lots 192 and 193 on South Cherry Street, which have been redesigned and enlarged along road frontages and corners. The lots to the left or north of Main Street have been altered. Lot 62 to 64 are now lot 62 and 63, since lot 64 encroached into Bayview Drive. Therefore, that lot was eliminated. Side yard angles were changed on lot 65 through 81. Lots 133 has changed shape and been enlarged along Main Street. Some of the lots have gained square footage due to the reconfiguration along Bayview Drive. Lot 126 has been enlarged along Bayview Drive. Lot 141 and 144C have been altered and realigned based on the layout of Holly Street, Bayview Drive, and the lagoon. Most of the big changes were on corners and the alignment of the streets. There were straight lines for streets, and when they got in the field and found center lines, they came up with a little angle change towards the intersection, and then a straightening, and then another angle towards the street on the opposite side of the block.
Sorry about that, guys.
On page 3, or sheet 3 of the old section, these lots are similar in shape and dimensions. Lot 199 has been enlarged at the corner of Plum Street and Holly Street. The sideline between lot 200 and 200A on Persimmon Street has been altered, increasing the square footage and width of lot 200. Lot 218A on Orange Street has been enlarged in depth and square footage. Lot 223 on Apple Street has been enlarged by dimension and square footage. Lot 208 on the corner of Persimmon Street and Holly Street has been enlarged in width and square footage. Lots 214, 215, 231, and 9 have been altered at the corners of Holly Street intersections. Lots 232, 233, and 230B on Apple Street and Main Street has been altered and realigned. Most of the major or the bigger alterations are at corners of intersections. Mm-hmm. In summary, in a reference sheet 4, which is the new section, there have been minor corrections in square footage and dimensions to corner lots due to specific data on corner radii has been provided. Lot 7 and 10, or through 10 of Block G, has been deleted. The cul-de-sac on 8th Street has been relocated due to the existence of wetlands, according to Coast Survey, and all the remaining lots are typically the same. On sheet 5, also the new section, it's basically the same minor corrections in square footage and dimensions to corner lots due to the specific data on corner radii, and the remaining lots again are typically the same. Again, the purpose of this review is to determine if the surveys are satisfactory to replace the original surveys prepared by Isaac Bennett and expanded and altered by Walter Topp. The commission is favorable. The approval should be in concept only, until all lot corners are monumented. Once the monumentation is completed, the plot showing the monumentation should be presented to the commission for final approval as amended. Then the staff will notify the county administrator that the surveys have been found to be acceptable and the moratorium may be relaxed. If the moratorium is relaxed or lifted, the developer or the tenants of the park will be required to provide as-built lot surveys showing the lots, monumentation, all improvements on the lots and neighboring lots, square footages, dimensions, and proposed improvements so that the staff may determine if Board of Adjustment action will be necessary for any variances in setback, spacing, or lot coverage. A letter from the developer acknowledging approval of proposed improvements shall also be required prior to the issuance of any permit. And that's pretty much in summary of my findings.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
A little long-winded, but probably.
Well, I think it was well done. It might have been long, but it was necessary to understand exactly what's been happening with this. Certainly, I would agree with your comments of approving it in concept only, because it should be monumented.
Well, what I did, I took the surveys prepared originally by Mr. Bennett and altered by Mr. Todd, which the commission's seen over 30 years of the commission over a couple of conditional use applications and reviewed and compared to the new survey by Coast. And tried to, I basically used red to highlight lines where I saw changes.
Okay.
And I even checked every square footage and every dimension, and
they're all,
been some changes in square footage.
These are all lease lots, right?
Everybody, all lease lots.
Everybody's leasing. Okay. Granted, there are other violations or alleged violations there. Who ultimately has the responsibility for compliance with that? For instance, the 35% lot coverage, who's supposed to make sure, who's owner or tenant responsible for that, I guess is my question.
Well, typically we would violate the tenant and carbon copy the developer. And the method that we propose now, on more recently, is, for example, Sierra, we require the approval from the park to show that they've authorized it before we give it consideration.
The park owner.
So that's why I said in that last paragraph, is basically we would, before we could grant approval of a permit, we would have to have approval from the park. And the staff's gonna have to determine, based on the information provided by survey, what the improvements already exist in square footage and the setbacks, as well or not they would need a variance for any expansion.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir.
I have some additional concerns about all this, and some of those concerns are related to the actual homeowners. You know, if we have this survey where there's been a migration of property lines and increasing or reducing property sizes, which then it could impact on whether there's 30% met or not, and then to turn around and have those individual lot owners or homeowners have to go out and get their own survey and provide all that when this is perhaps a problem that's incumbent upon the developer. I'm hesitant to do something that would cause all those homeowners to have to incur the expense of the surveys and then go for the Board of Adjustment and those costs, when perhaps really the fault lies at the at the feet of the developer, and perhaps additional information that we would need to really evaluate this is having a survey that includes all these buildings and additions and sheds and decks included on that to see just, you know, do they in fact fall within that lot line, or because these lot lines have now changed, do we now have people encroaching on other people's property? Because we have one, you know, people were operating on an old survey that showed different lot lines, and now the new survey shows something different.
Question is, though, who did the encroaching?
Right.
If the developer did not do the encroaching, is he the one who should be paying for all that?
But is the developer one that would have to be approving the location of those mobile homes or modular homes? I don't know who ultimately is responsible for that.
That was my question earlier, and it was who ultimately is responsible for a violation of the 35% coverage? Is it the developer or the tenant?
Yeah, right. That's been argued for 30-some years.
That's a question that has to be answered. And I agree with you. If it's, you know, whoever's responsible should be paying.
Well, and,
you know,
and in the sense of...
Or they should share it, one or the other.
In the sense, right, in the sense of fairness, you know, the placement of the original building is one thing. If that homeowner now goes and adds on a deck or an addition, then that may be their problem that they created. But the actual placement of a home within the lot, I would presume, would be require the approval of the developer for the original placement.
It would seem so, yeah. I mean, it would seem so, yeah.
So if the homeowner then results in putting on a bigger deck or sheds or whatever that results in it being a violation of the 30%, then that's their problem, not the developer's problem.
So the reality is, as cumbersome as it is, it has to be on a lot-by-lot basis almost.
Well, when we did... backing up into another project, when we did the Sierra project, we got an agreement with the developers to provide both survey and aerial. And they overlaid the survey onto the aerial and tried to show the improvements. They didn't dimension everything because it was based on aerial, but they tried to show it. and you could see somewhat of the encroachments. And now the individuals come in with a survey to show us where the actual improvements are, and they note the square footage is shown and the improvements are shown, so we can see more specifically in detail the dimensions from, or the spacing between units and the dimensions from sidelines, et cetera.
How did that work with the SEER?
It's working. It still has some problems, little kinks to work out, but it's working. They've been to the board on several occasions since, and it's working.
That would be a less cumbersome way to do it.
But the aerial would certainly assist that in that determination.
In negotiations with the developer, in this application, they were not required to provide the aerial.
Yeah.
Required. Well, we didn't say yes.
We could require it, can't we?
It could, I guess.
Aren't the
county lot, attorney didn't require?
But aren't the lot?
No, that was that Mr. Burrell?
He was. Yeah. He did. He was sitting down in negotiation for information.
From the Board of Adjustment perspective.
He represent, well, he basically would represent the board, but we would represent the county administrator. But he,
okay. Yeah, because it started through the board, and right. So that's why Mr. Burrell sort of took the lead on that.
Is there some reason why they didn't require the aerial? I mean, just seems to me that if that's
you end up with the same problem. What the aerial does will give you a picture of what's there, but it doesn't give you any dimensions or accurate square footages on the improvements. So you still have to do an as-built to verify the sizes and dimensions and square footage of what's already there to be able to see what's added to see if you're impacting the 35% or impacting the setback. As a survey, you copy it, it's distorted.
So what you're saying is that really to get it right, you'd have to have the actual survey location for each lot.
You have to have the actual survey physically right. And what they had to do on Sierra again was some of the lots, because they were heavy wooded, they had to go in and actually physically survey. So those few lots that were heavily wooded are probably more accurate than what the aerial should. But they actually went in and located all the units.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Isn't the leases of these properties have meets and bounds in them? Are they all going to be changed?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I was sitting here thinking that same thing. What in the world is in all these individual leases?
I would say they probably don't have dimensions. And
I was
thinking probably a lot.
The lot number, just probably. A lot number with a drawing.
That'd be my guess.
So
not
what
wrong.
That tells me is that
you accepted the lot.
You accepted the lot, and it's lot whatever they said it was. You know, I think Mr. Johnson has a point. Somebody has to do a survey. It's the only way you're going to know what's there. The issues.
Survey actually
the improvements.
The home and the improvements.
Now, I can tell you that on an individual basis, the cost of doing one of those is not going to kill anybody. The cost of doing how many? How many units are there? 1,000? 1,500?
No, not that many. I don't remember the actual number, but it's several hundred units.
I think it's 297.
I think it's five pages worth.
All right, so it's 300, you know, it's 300 of those, and I know it's money. Somebody's going to have to.
Well, as I said, what was done in Sierra, and we're still getting complaints about it because of the cost, has been to the tenants have come in with the as-built, and the park has to approve them. In some cases, the park has done it, and typically they were park lots that the park still maintained as non-leases, and they were setting them up for lease purposes. But they would do the survey. In this case, majority of Bay City is occupied.
Well, there's no problem with it, in my mind, gentlemen. There's no problem with the concept. The concept is, for the concept drawing, it's fine, but that's all it is right now.
Well, that's all. It could be considered that there's no monuments in place to be able to determine.
But until you get the monuments, and really you need the whole shooting match to really know what you've got. And
the purpose of our review, again, was to establish whether these lot lines could be adjusted, or whether you would approve them, disapprove them, defer them, or whatever.
Individually?
No, in total, for the five sheets.
Yeah, if you want.
Well, I don't know about the rest of commissioners, but that's an awful lot for me to digest here in a short period of time. So, Mr. Chairman, concerning the Bay City Mobile Home Park corrective survey on Road 22, my motion is deferral to give the commission time for further consideration.
Second.
It's moved and seconded to defer action on the Bay City Mobile Home Park corrective survey on Road 22 to give the commission more time to consider the information presented. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.